Real quick before we begin, don't forget that we will be in Flushing Meadow, New York on October 26th to discuss the history of the 1964-65 World's Fair and its impact on Disney World and Disneyland. You can get more information at etccustomevents.com. Welcome back to another edition of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It's Len. We're here in early September, and we're back for another show. Very excited to have this. As you guys may have heard, at the end of September will be the last performances of some long-running shows in World Showcase, specifically the World Showcase Players, Off Kilter, Mo Rockin', and The Spirit of America will be having their last performances in Epcot right around the last week of September. I think World Showcase Players is done on the 25th, and then September 27th is the last day for everybody else. So if you combine this in with the closing of the American Idol experience in the studios, it means there are quite a few shows and live performances have been shuttered or will be shuttered by the beginning of Disney's fiscal year in 2015, October 1st, 2015. So with me to discuss this and to shed some light on how this is happening and why is Mr. Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going?
Hey, Len. It's going well. I mean, I do feel badly for these performers at Walt Disney World and Disneyland. Let's not forget that in addition to the entertainment cuts that have happened or are happening at Epcot and Disney Hollywood Studios, and we need to sort of back up the truck here and remember that back in February we lost the Ziti sisters at Epcot's Italian Pavilion and
right.
Out on the West Coast, Billy Hill and the Hillbillies, who had been, you know, a staple of Disneyland forever. Did the last show in January. Though, to his credit, Matt, we met the former president of Disneyland and now the president of Cedar Fair, as soon as he heard they were on the market, snatched them up. So that group is now over it. Now, I think they literally were out of work for like 2 weeks.
A nice vacation for them.
Yeah, and ended up over at Knott's, but now they're known as Crazy Kirk in the Hillbillies. So
Crazy Kirk.
So Disney cannot descend, you know, with their lawyers. But yeah, it's a strange time. In some of this, it is flat out, for example, American the American Idol experience.
Oh, yeah.
That was originally supposed to close in January. That was actually going to be, they were going to wait till after the holiday entertainment had wrapped. And
January
2015.
There we go. Okay, yeah.
Here's Frozen Summer Fun, which became this huge phenomena.
Right.
And, you know, then it was sort of like, well, I know it's called Summer Fun, but, you know, we really need to shut it down. And they quietly...
Thank you, global warming. We'll just let this... we'll just let this thing run and run. Yeah.
In fact, what's kind of interesting is from some of the very performers who, you know, again, there's this definite grapevine, you know, of performers at Disney, and they all talk, and, you know, a lot of stuff trickles back to me, but yeah. I heard from there's specifically five performers that they use for the first time in forever, the Frozen sing-along celebration. And, you know, as they were getting into, they hadn't even gotten through July when they were reaching out to them, and it's like, you know, I know our contract is only supposed to run through the tail end of August, but would you consider September, October, and, you know, can we also maybe take a flyer on holding you as long as April of next year?
Oh, April, I hadn't heard that. I'd heard December was the farthest.
Well, evidently there's language now in the revised deal that will allow them to keep the show in place. But then it got kind of interesting because, of course, they were in the Premier Theater, mm-hmm. and one of the more popular holiday offerings at Disney's Hollywood Studios now is the Comedy Warehouse Holiday Special.
Right. That's in the old soundstage, right?
Well, actually, no. They had it in the soundstage at first.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you got in there to see that, but they actually ended up putting the light board against the emergency exit, you know, which again...
Oh, this is the fire hazard year.
Yes.
Look, no one died, Jim.
No one died. But it was kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, that they were willing to look away for the 2 weeks that this ran. But after that, it's like, no, you can't do that again. So they moved it out of that Sounds Dangerous over to the Premier Theater, where the Hunchback used to be. And now.
So
now you see the chess pieces start to move around the board.
Musical chairs. Yeah, get it? Musical chairs. Funny.
Yeah.
So that's, okay. Well, so last year, I mean, that number one, that that show, the Christmas show, played to completely full audiences every time I saw it. I don't know if I saw it. I think I saw it last year, but I know I saw it a couple of times the year before. So it definitely makes sense going to the Premier Theater. And they want to keep it because that's good holiday entertainment. I think last year, Jim, it even had FastPass Plus, right?
It did.
Yeah,
it did.
Yeah, so is that popular?
So
Premier Theater is out in December, right? Because you're not gonna put that show in American Idol. That's a really big space for a show that's not gonna fill it. Oh, I get it.
Right, and, okay. You know, and so more to the point, when you move Frozen to the front of the park, and don't get me wrong, that's also a FastPass Plus show at this point.
Yep, it is.
So, you know, and in fact, they didn't kid around. I mean, you know, you've heard from folks at the park. The day after American Idol closed, all the signage was down.
I saw that.
You know, just boom, gone.
Get the guys who replaced the signs to work on the Yeti, because I'm thinking, I've killed Jim. I'm thinking there that there might be some hustle. Anyway.
Yeah, we could only hope. So anyway, that's the piece of chess that's going on, folks.
That totally makes sense. Okay.
So wait till about mid-October. The first time for forever sing-along show will go dark for a couple days. They'll swap theaters and then start doing prep in Premiere to get ready for holiday special.
So here's my question. Here's my question about the. I have a question anyway about the Frozen sing-along thing. But you were going to say something?
No, go ahead.
The Frozen sing-along thing seems to me, I mean, it's like five people, right? It's the it's the husband and wife team, it's Anna and Elsa, and then it's like the one other guy, right? So maybe five, maybe six performers.
Right.
It seems like that they're heavily dependent on a small number of personalities. Now, these aren't – and they've got to be able to sing too, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've got to be able to do comedy. They've got to be able to sing. These aren't regular cast members, are they? These aren't like, you know, people.
No, they're actually Actors Equity. In fact, I pulled this actually off of Disney's audition page. When they were hiring for the show, there were three roles from the film, Anna, Elsa, and Kristoff, and then the highly interactive historians, Aria and Eric. And all five of these roles are Actors Equity. And what's so funny is that when you read these, descriptions, they're so ridiculously specific. I mean, for example, Elsa, you know, that she can only be between 5'3 and 5'7. She has to have the actress who plays this role has to have a strong stage presence, commanding personality and voice. On the other hand, her sister can be the same height. And this is what's kind of interesting. The other thing, because again, Disney, multi-ethnic, multi-hue company, both of these roles can be played by females of 18 years plus, but all ethnicities. But same thing, that the actress who plays this role has to be between 5'3 and 5'7, has to be able to play quirky and awkward, but has to have great comic timing and be very outgoing. Now, something important to stress here, because again, when you go to Disney and you're, you know, on the great movie ride and you have somebody talking to you, that's not Actors Equity. That's a cast member who's spieling. And these are actually, you know, they're normal cast members who get what they refer to as their base pay plus spiel play or speech.
Spiel pay?
Spielpay, I'm sorry. That's right. Steven Spielberg's lesser-known brother, Spielpay. But these, you find these people in interventions. They do the Safari of an Animal Kingdom, Jungle Cruise. But again, to further confuse people, if you go to see Turtle Talk with Crush or you see Monsters, Inc., that's Actors Equity. Because again, they believe that they need somebody with strong improv comic, you know, someone who's had training who can do those jobs. They can't just hand that off to any cast member.
Okay, so so the key difference between regular pay and Spiel pay and mm-hmm. equity seems to be the ability to not need to follow a script.
Well, or more to the point that you had to, the weird thing is that you have to have act and then be in equity, the union, to be allowed to do this. And in the case, if you're an equity player, you get, minimum, your starting pay starts at $16.03 an hour.
And what's the starting pay for a regular cast member?
I want to say it's nine something.
So $7 an hour. That's,
yeah,
that's a considerable bump.
Plus, they also kick in for actors' equity pension.
They kick in for pension.
And you get the Disney help provided. But here's the weird thing: actors' equity in Disney, they didn't have a contract till August of 1990.
Really?
All right. Yeah, it was the first deal, which was the 3-year deal to cover at that time. The 420 actors who, you know, actors, comedians, stunt performers who worked at the then three parks. Again, August of 1990. Up until that point, the only way you had a union protecting you was if you were a Teamster.
Wow. So,
And seriously, the Teamsters only came on Disney property and started representing people in August of 82. So just prior to the opening of Epcot, what's really funny about this is that the first union, the first people represented by the Teamsters, actresses at Disney World who wore costumes to play the cartoon characters.
So they were actresses who...
Literally, if you put on a rubber head outfit, if you were inside that suit, you could be a Teamster.
There's a Jimmy Hoffa joke in there somewhere. I just know
there
it.
Is, and it just and in fact, it got so bizarre. Prior to the show, I was doing a lot of research because I'm just fascinated by this whole equity term Teamster thing. And there's this wonderful story from June of 2001 where the Teamsters actually had to get involved with Disney management. and again, they were 2 months at the negotiating table trying to get this resolved, but the cast members who played Mickey and Cinderella wanted the right to take the underwear that they wore under the suits home to be able to wash it themselves because they didn't think Disney Laundry was doing a good enough job.
Yeah, and I would think if somebody asks you if they want to take them their underwear and launder them, I'm like, God bless you, go do it.
There was that you wouldn't bring your underwear back, but it was like the thing of it was that the cast member was complaining about lice and skid marks, basically, the whole notion of that. We have a Gary Steverson, who was a stilt walker from Animal Kingdom by that time. It's like he said, things get passed around, and I know I don't want to share my tights, and I don't want to share my underwear, the weird thing is that when you played a character, there is language in the contract that if you're a guy, you have to wear the Disney-issued jockstrap or bicycle shorts under your costume. So it was just one of these
things. You think the Van Halen Brown M&M thing was strange?
I know. This just killed me. But they were, this was something they had caved in on. The interesting thing is the Teamsters, by this point, had reached out, the Teamsters and five other unions represented, out of the 55,000 people who worked at Walt Disney World at that time, they represented almost half of them. They had 25,000 people signed up, and that's considerably slid back in the year since. In fact, it wasn't no less than 2 years later. Actors' Equity was actually complaining about the fact that a lot of the positions that used to be equity positions at Walt Disney World mm-hmm. had been cut back. That Disney, in a lot of ways kept sort of pointing back to the fact that we haven't fully recovered since 9/11, and okay. We need to tighten the belt in different places, and among the places, when we don't have a whole lot of people down here filling hotel rooms and filling the parks, we don't need as much entertainment. And, you know, so where this just gets interesting is that when you go back to the early, early, early days, mm-hmm. I mean, like for example, just this, in fact, I think it's this month, they're going to be celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Hoop-Dee-Doo.
Really?
Or you know, 73, 74. Is that, the 40th anniversary. And, you know, that if you talk to folks like Gary Goddard, who was part of the college program back in the day when they did this, you know, I mean, again, the Hoop-Dee-Doo was basically something they put into a space at Pioneer Hall that had been kind of unsuccessful for breakfast. And you know, they just didn't want it sitting there at lunch, empty lunch and dinner. And they came up with the show to present in there at night. And the college kids, when they were getting the show up out of the ground, were doing things like leaping off the balcony onto the stage. And, you know, by the time it became really successful and at the end of the summer when the college kids had to go home, they were hiring equity people, and the equity reps came and sat and watched the show. So, well, there's no way in hell we're doing that.
Suckers.
Yeah. So it's like the show that you see now is not the show that they wrote. But again, that's equity is always out to protect you. In fact, what's fascinating about the agreement right now, or actually they've just signed a brand new 5-year agreement, but I've got a hold of the agreement that ran from October 2010 to March of 2014. And it's this amazing document. I mean, there's guidelines in there, for example, for non-performing character roles. And that's, for example, people like the people who drive the floats.
Right.
Or a vehicle that's in a parade that's considered a performance vehicle, which in this case would be, say, the Maleficent Dragon in, you know, the new, Festival of Fantasy parade, where, you know, it's got a fire helmet, it's got a tail, and so everybody there has got to be equity to do this.
Because of the fire.
Yeah, that's it exactly. And then within that hierarchy, you've got people who are known as, you know, character captains and character sub-captains, and there's even specific rules about how you can audition or how auditions can be held for different characters.
Really?
And yeah, it's and then from there it really does get strange because as we mentioned with Anna and Elsa, there are specific height requirements for characters. I mean, for example, if you're playing Aladdin, Prince Charming, Prince Eric, the Sleeping Beauty Prince, you have to be between 5'10" and 6". You can't be shorter or you can't be taller.
I mean, 5'10" is sort of like the average height in the United States, right? I mean,
but at the same time, you know, for example, if you're playing Peter Pan, you can be 5 feet, you know, I mean, 5 feet tall, 5'7", that's it. You can't, they can't have a tall Peter Pan.
Right, okay.
And now, on the other hand, if you want to play a character, what they refer to as a rubberhead, if you want to be one of the people in the suits, then it's interesting. They can take you within a half inch of your actual height. For example, Goofy, mm-hmm. you need to be, I want to say, between 5'6" and 6 feet tall. And I have a friend, Thomas T, who, you know, that's at one point really wanted to play Goofy and went out for the part and they loved him, but they measured him and he was a half inch too short.
Oh.
And so the next time it came time for auditions, Thomas went in again. But this time he was wearing 5 sets of athletic socks.
And he
and he aced it. But it was just all he had to do was make the height that time, and he made it. So you've got, you know, for example, you've got all these women who want to play Disney princesses and maybe can do the voice and maybe have the face. But for example, if you're going to play Mulan, if you're not between 5'2" and 5'6", you can't play that role. You know, on the other hand, Maleficent, who now is in the park both as the classic green face character,
right.
but also as Angelina Jolie's version. Again, you've got to be 5'11", 5'6",
yeah.
and you've got to be able to wear that headdress.
So speaking of Maleficent, are there any talks about doing the two different versions, the two different personalities of Maleficent? in the parks, because, I mean, the coming out of the movie, right, that which was – the movie's done a ton of money, right? It's like the third
or
fourth
– It has.
Yeah, it's done a really good job. But
it's funny you say that. What was it? This past Friday
– Guardians of the Galaxy is now number one, but
– Yeah. Well, I did, but I got to sit down with Don Hahn, the producer of Maleficent, and he was talking about, I mean, it took them 7 years to get this thing to the screen, and there was a time when this was going to be an animated film.
Right.
But, you know, they had it in development at Disney, and just the whole notion of, you know, we're not going to ever find an actress who's willing to do this, so let's do this animated. Then somebody threw it Angelina Jolie's way, and she was like, oh, yeah, I'd do that. That would be interesting. And then it just was this weird kind of two-step of
yes, Miss Jolie, whatever you want. Yes, Miss Jolie,
direct it. And for, yeah. And for a time, Tim Burton was involved. He was going to do it.
Okay.
And I guess in the end he defaulted and did Frankenweenie instead, but they're really thrilled about the business it's done, and they find it very amusing that they are now bringing this version of Maleficent into the parks. In fact, she's one of the number one Halloween costumes for this year. Everybody who has it has gone clean on this thing. So they are, somewhere in the area, there are children frantically selling Maleficent outfits right now. They're going to be, rather than container ship to the U.S., they're going to be, drop ship. They're going to fly them over to try to have some more available in September and October. But, it has become a conversation because, for example, at the, what just happened at the Mickey's Not So Scary, where, people were able to go to the Sinister Soiree. And it was one of these things, well, where's Maleficent? Oh, well, there's Maleficent. No, I want to talk to the other Maleficent. And it's like, oh, crap. and they do have a face version of the one from the movie.
Yeah.
But not the animated film. So that they're now, again, now you have to send out an audition form. And in fact, I wanted to give you an example of those. Right now they're actually looking for folks they're hiring a new set of performers for both the Epic Stunt Show here in the States as well as the one at Disneyland Paris. So it's like we're looking for precision drivers and expert motorcycle riders. And, but again, same thing. It's like, performer with this much experience, this age, you have to be good, in front of an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a fascinating part of the world that behind the scenes, Disney is constantly looking for, people, to hire to do these things for the parks. And whether it's, for example, this is how they break them down for auditions. You have Disney character lookalikes, and that's basically the face characters.
Right.
You also have Disney character performers, and that means you're inside a suit and you're wearing a rubber head,
mm-hmm.
or you're a parade performer, which means you could wind up wearing a 1,500-pound dress and dancing all the way down the street. So.
Wow. Yeah, okay. But the parade performers who wear the dress, but they don't speak. They're not equity, right? They're performers.
No, they are the plain old cast members. And,
okay. Right.
And the other thing I think what's fascinating about this is that you have to understand over the course of the history of the theme parks what Disney expected of its performers who wore, whether they were face characters or rubber heads. It's just in the past 25 years, Len, the way they hired for these things. It used to be, get me somebody who looks like Snow White. And all you had to do, because everybody had Kodak Instamatics or Polaroid cameras, your job was to stand still and smile with the child.
Right.
Because you didn't want to blur somebody's photographs.
Or they were doing like 3-second or 7-second, film, 8mm film clips, right? So you didn't have to do much. I get it.
Yeah. But the moment that the video cameras started coming to the parks in the late 80s, early 90s, it was, honey, don't just stand there. Do something. So, there was suddenly all this pressure on character performers to act like the character. So they actually had it behind the scenes, these rehearsals where, you know, you for example, you gave Snow White a script to when the kids asked where the dwarves were, you know, they're in the mines. Or, you know, you taught somebody who was in a Goofy outfit how to walk and move safely as Goofy, but at the same time understanding that they're looking out through the mouth, they have very limited visibility.
Right.
That's, in fact, one of the reasons why so many of these characters now have handlers, because, and in fact...
Just to walk over somebody, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, that's another reason why you've seen the characters who used to wander the park and be spontaneous. That's another reason why you've seen a lot of them go to specific photo drops and specific photo locations. Because, to be honest, Disney has found out that this is a huge part of the reason people go to the parks. They want their pictures taken with the characters. They consider it an essential part of a trip to the theme parks.
Right.
So that's why they put it on the map. And, you know, that's why they maintain a schedule of, you know, Cinderella or whoever will be here for 8 to 10 hours per day.
Yeah.
And then that's that wonderful moment where it's like, oh, Cinderella must step out for a moment. She must, you know, go talk to the magic, the fairy godmother, and she walks out and, you know, and she comes back as a slightly different Cinderella and just picks right up. Yeah, I mean, and, you know, just the kids who are standing in line don't care.
No, nobody cares. Yeah, exactly.
Nobody cares. It's like, speaking of the photos thing, have you been paying attention at all to what's going on with this Memory Makers thing, the thing that's launched in the parks now?
So it took over PhotoPass, and I noticed there were some changes to the photo packages at the character meals. Some of them took effect.
Yes.
Already taken effect. Some of them are taking effect in January. But, yeah, it looks like... It's a radical change in how they do things, because you can share them among your friends with My Disney Experience.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and not only that, but they, because the whole notion is it's not one photograph of, you know, for example, it's not PhotoPass. It's like, this is your picture of Mickey, this is your picture with Belle. Now the notion is that, and they've gone from a souvenir, they did very deliberately, you know, it's like, we are not a souvenir photo shop anymore. We are a photography service.
Right.
So,
interesting choice. Okay. All right.
And they've actually retrained all of their photographers now. Now, for example, when you do a character, you know, when you're in line
a couple of these, yeah, character greetings, yeah, okay.
So, have you noticed you get 5 shots?
Now? Yes. The first time this happened, I was at Pete's Silly Sideshow in the Magic Kingdom, and I was there for Memorial Day with my daughter and one of her friends. And we, you know, we get in line for, you know, Donald or something, and then Goofy a second. And, you know, we get all of our picture with Donald, and I start saying thank you. And the photographer was like, dude, we've just started. He was like, no, stay there. I'll tell you when you're done. I'm like, you'll tell me when we're done? And he was like, okay, try this pose. Now, you know, pretend like you're looking out this way. Or he did 4 or 5 shots before he let us go. Well, I thought he was just trying to, like, delay it until Goofy was ready.
No, in fact, right now, they have been retrained. All right, these are the images they are supposed to get. They are supposed to get the arrival moment, as in, there's the character, and here you are walking up. So, and then they're supposed to get the hug, the moment there. Then they get the pose shot. You know, so, you know, the static pose that we all used to get. Then there's the moment of interaction with the character. And then they are actually supposed to get the goodbye. And you're supposed to have 5 shots for every time you get together with a character.
And what's the idea more, is that out of that 5, instead of getting 1, there might be 2 that are decent. And they've essentially just doubled their...
But right now, there are more photographers in the park than there have ever been in the history of Disney. In
fact,
it's no longer a contract outfit. Disney is hiring its own people. It's training them. And in fact, the thing that's fascinating about this, and I got this straight from the VP who's in charge of the new program, really smart guy, and we'll get to what they've just started in a minute. But they're going for spontaneous images. They are, if you are, for example, you're a grandparent and you're sitting in the shade with your granddaughter asleep, you know, in the, in your arms, really don't be surprised if a photographer comes up to you, you know, visual Disney photographer, say, hey, can I take your picture and grab your info? And, you know, just the whole notion of get those really personal moments, not just the stand in front of the castle and smile or shake Mickey's hand or that sort of thing. And then the other thing that's absolutely fascinating, that is just in the past month, the Tower of Terror online video.
Yeah, and they've been testing that for like a year.
They have, but this is it. This is officially rolled out, and this is the first. Number two is you know, with the Hitchhiking Ghosts. That'll be coming online fairly shortly, and this will be the first of a series. You know, I mean, cause face it, you know, that we, you know, how many people have sent videos with their short videos with their phones. I mean, this is the world we live in. In fact, that's the other thing they've actually been training the Disney photographers to do is, in addition to the stuff they're doing with their professional digital cameras, they've trained them to use every phone on the planet to take selfies.
That's right. They've got to, because you figure, okay, iPhone, everyone can figure out an iPhone in 5 minutes. Yep. And then, you know, the most common Android phones are probably get the Galaxy series, so they can get those. But, you know, you've got tourists coming over from Japan. What is this, right?
That's exactly. And people handing them their tablets and that sort of thing. And it's just like, when you work for Disney now in their photography department, I mean, you have to be conversant in it, not only your camera, but every camera that anybody hands you to, because you are, again, you are now on a photography service. You know,
I can imagine, right? So you're a photographer, right? You come in to Disney for the interview. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, you know, so tell me about your experience. And then everybody stops talking and they hand you some obscure South Korean phone and they're like, give me your best selfie. You've got 30 seconds. And you're flipping through these menus, you know, with sushi rolls as icons and stuff. And you're it's going to be very pressure filled. I think it's funny.
I agree. But at the same time, this is why people go to Disney World. They want to be able, you know, this whole notion of take that memory home. And if you have five shots of your time with the characters, you know, and what you're going to put in the coffee mug, what you're going to put on, you know, the screen of your phone, that sort of thing. And more to the point, every photo that's out there mm-hmm. of you interacting with characters is free advertising for the resort. Anyway. Back to live entertainment. I know there are people who are upset about what's going on at Epcot. And as they should be, because let's be honest, you know, live entertainment has been a part of the Disney theme park since the first one opened in 55. I mean, Walt, whenever he took somebody to the parks, you know, he would take you to Jungle Cruise. He would take you to see his castle. And one of the stops of the tour was always at the Golden Horseshoe, where you got to see Wally Bogue, you know, Fulton Burley, and you got to see Betty Taylor. And Walt honestly believed that live action, that interaction with performer and a guest really was significant. And, you know, that was a part of what made going to Disneyland fun, which was why, you know, that for the longest time when you walk by the silent theater, you know, somebody in a Lon Chaney Phantom of the Opera mask would run out of the dark and go at you. Or if you went to the magic shop, you know, you had somebody like a young Steve Martin behind the counter doing card tricks, not just to sell you something, but to just because it's a magical place. Hell, you know, even when you went to the Tinkerbell toy store in Fantasyland, they actually had a puppet show that ran there daily that wasn't anything, you know, you paid for. It just was a spontaneous event. But now it's the modern Disney company, and they're trying, really looking hard at what to do with live action at the parks. Is frankly, our attitude going to the parks has changed. So there's everything we talked about earlier, that people want time with the characters. They want, you know, that again, if, you know, think about the lines we've seen for Anna and Elsa. And, you know, it's just realistically, are you going to buy a plane ticket for everyone in your family to go to Orlando and then book a hotel room or book a vacation package for off kilter? You know, or are you, you know, if Anna and Elsa have a ride and a meet and greet and a meal, you know, that's a tipping point.
Yeah.
You know, and meantime, you know, think about how many of these seasonal events, you know, Food and Wine is going to start, you know, in just a week or so. And a key component of that nowadays is those E to the Beat concerts. And, you know, don't get me wrong, you're not paying millions of dollars to get the Pointer Sisters and the Commodores and Smash Mouth and Wilson Phillips down here.
Mm-hmm.
here, but that's still expensive. And, you know, when you're looking to do that, because you know that will get people there in the weekends and they'll walk around and buy your overpriced little morsels of food and glasses of wine, you know, then something like that where it's like, look, the ZD sisters aren't necessarily making the turnstile spin, but you know, a candlelight procession with a Whoopi Goldberg or a Neil Patrick Harris or a Blair Underwood, they do.
So you think there's a shift coming from these sort of no name or homegrown, or let's say even say locally grown things to more bigger names, named aging performers? I mean,
well, I think it's more to the effect of it's now, you know, there is so much pressure these days to increase your numbers at the parks. And when you're a manager at the park and, you know, you are trying to justify, you know, your budget, or you're looking for places to make cuts, it's like, you know, I need money to get Jody Benson down here, or Christopher Cross, or that sort of thing. I need to get them here. Christopher Cross is coming back.
This is the first time that sentence has ever been uttered in the English language.
He's not sailing away. He's sailing back. Okay.
I'm not commenting one way or the other on his musical talents. I'm merely saying.
Okay. He was just profiled on CBS Sunday Morning. I mean, that's a sign, Len.
Sign. That's almost as that. I mean, he's practically Mariah Carey's backup singer. All right. Fair enough. He'll be touring with Gaga soon.
All right. To be fair here, though, you know, it's important to stress that even as this is going on, even as, you know, we're seeing the World Showcase players go away and that sort of thing, back in July, you know, just middle of July, they were in the process of holding auditions for male actors for the Holiday Around the World presentations. They were, getting performers to play Pierre Noël or Saint Nicholas for all of those things that they do the weeks around the holidays at World Showcase. So it's not that these things are necessarily going away. And in fact, they were very insistent last week when the word news broke that, you know, these long-running shows at the parks had been cut, and it's like, well, wait a minute, we've got stuff coming. They've got a traditional Berber music and dance group headed into Morocco. They have what they describe as a core of dynamic flag-waving performers in Italy.
It's
like, wow, hey, look at them flags! And a thrilling lumberjack-inspired show that's going to go into Canada, and a Celtic music thing for United Kingdom, but they're still casting. They're still trying to pull those together.
Lumberjacks.
Thrilling lumberjacks, Len. And again, trust me, when somebody's waving an axe around you, you applaud.
You play attention. Right? I know you pay attention, but I'm like, well, what? Is watching wood being chopped only the second most boring thing after watching grass grow? I mean, what? I don't.
Okay, I want to point out that we're the country that sits around and watches Cake Boss. All right.
Yes, true. Okay, Bill.
All right. or Cupcake Wars. Okay, it's sort of like
I see to your argument, Jim.
There you go.
Wow.
I want to say this. Also, want to warn folks. This may not be the last cut.
Really?
Well, face it, you know, people vote with their feet, particularly in a theme park.
Yeah.
If they don't stand around and watch the whole show, you know, Disney management notices.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the shows, the performers, and again, their equity, they're people went out and Disney hired them, they wrote shows. The Dumbo Circus area, all, you know, particularly the Giggle Gang, and also, the folks who do the Royal Majesty Makers, that sort of storytelling, both of those, you know, the shows have been up and running for about a year now. Those two shows have been, or two sets of performers have been in the park for about a year at this point. And the thing that's always interesting about a show like that is if you can ever, when one of them is going around, turn around and just sort of look at the crowd, and you will eventually see some Disney cast member with a clicker. Who is counting the number of people who are watching the show.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, they've been tabulating numbers on those, and it's quite possible Giggle Gang and Royal Majesty is going to go as well.
Wow.
So, but at the same time, who knows? They'll find some other exciting group to come in here. Maybe there's another group of flag wavers they could get.
Well, you know, flag waving is sort of the international sport.
There you go. But anyway, that's what's going on live entertainment wise, and this being the modern Disney company, I would imagine whatever's going into the kingdom to replace Giggle Gang will probably involve a tall, swarthy gentleman who cuts ice with his reindeer friend. So, just, or maybe a snowman. I could be wrong about that, Len. I could be wrong.
So. All right, good to know. Well, Jim, thanks very much for this information, especially the explanation of what an equity performer is.
Well, again, great fun. Again, I love the notion of trying to figure out who is it that's entertaining me here. Is this a really talented amateur or somebody who, has years and years of experience, great chops? I mean, you'd be, honestly, it's something like Monsters, Inc. Laugh For. You'd be amazed at the talent that's sitting upstairs working at a computer desk trying to make those monsters sing and dance.
So. I can imagine. All right, cool. Well, thanks again, Jim, for another edition. You guys have been listening to the Unofficial Guide to Disney Dish podcast with Jim Hill. Please go onto iTunes and rate us and let us know what you'd like to hear on the next show. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.